Success isn't given, it's earned. And earning it means becoming the person who deserves it. The bottom line is where we cut through the chaos to simplify success, uncovering the strategies, mindset, and resilience it takes to win. Real stories, expert insights, and practical tools. Because the only way to the top is by putting in the work. This is The Bottom Line.
Welcome to The Bottom Line, the show where I cut through the noise and get you clarity, strategy, and the mindset to grow it and earn it. I'm Ryan Herpin, and today I'm sitting down with Anthony Wall Jr. Anthony is the founder and president of Noesis, a humanitarian organization with a global mission. Try to get your arms around this, folks. This is not just a small conversation. This is a little bit different than what we've talked about before, but Noesis is dedicated to the arrest and reversal of human degradation. I'll let Anthony put a finger on this later as he's going to explain it much better, but from what I already know, you'll want to stick around for that because I've been kind of in awe of him for a little while now. Now, I'm also talking with a best-selling author. Anthony wrote The Human Injury. Its third edition will be published soon, so keep a lookout for that, but the book is an empathetic take on the human condition. The book reached number one in three categories: evolutionary science, mathematics, and ethics. Tony hovers over issues of human behavior that most of us truly just run from. So this episode is about leadership under pressure. Namely, how do I effectively lead when the mission is bigger than all of us? Not just me, but all of us. How do I position myself as a beacon of strength, particularly when, well, my team is overwhelmed? And how do I establish authority while never diminishing a team member in any way? The answers, according to Tony, well, require an entirely novel approach, right? Anthony, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you here today.
I couldn't be more pleased. Thanks very much, Ryan.
Absolutely. Now, in business, I'm always watching for, well, the same pattern, right? People say they want trust, but they communicate in a way that creates resistance. This segment is really intended to understand your personal journey, your origin story, and what this looks like from a big scope before we dive into some of the details. But, you know, I really want to look at, you know, what shaped your approach to this, how this all developed, and really how do you build the credibility around the message that's making a difference. Now, with this show being called The Bottom Line, I like to dive right into big hitting questions to understand you, your perspective, and deliver that value to the audience. Now, when people meet you today, they see the founder of Noesis, but what's the part of your story they don't see that really shaped you in this project?
You know, if we met in college, listen, I'm a much older man than you. If we met in college, we'd probably end up talking about these exact same things. These ideas have been rattling around in my head for decades. So Noesis, first of all, that's just a word. It won't mean anything to anybody. Noesis is a Greek word that means intelligence and understanding. If we have all the data and we massage it, we reach Noesis, the highest level of understanding. So we are dedicated to human sustainability for the most basic reason, Ryan. Let me drop this bomb right away. And that is that human beings are not sustainable in any way. Our species is not a sustainable species. If we do not address the issue, we'll be gone from this planet, and we'll be gone way sooner than we think. So I need to put that in place, that we're coming from a very large space today, trying to connect to your show, which is more about intra-office politics. I think we can pull it off.
I really think so, because, you know, although, yeah, my show, we talk a lot about business and things like that, I like the perspective from a much bigger lens. This is a unique experience, not just for me, but for the audience. And I think you're going to do a great job, as you always have in our conversations, of explaining these things and making stuff practical. But, you know, I'm curious, as we are talking about your origin story here, what was the first moment you really realized this isn't just an interest or a hobby? This is something you want to pour your life's work into.
Well, I'm driven by common sense and almost purely by observation. I'm an observer. I'm a trained observer. I say that because it's difficult to divorce yourself from action-reaction models. that's what I spent 50 years doing. When I became a trained observer, and I just removed myself from everything, I sat back and my questions became, rather than look at this mess, they became, what the hell's going on here? What's driving all of this? And then I get busy looking for the patterns, the mathematical patterns. When you're an observer, you can pick up mathematical patterns. It occurred to me long ago that human behavior is more of a mathematical concern than situational. In fact, situational analysis of human behavior is useless. I'll show that. We're walking mathematical formulas. So with that in mind, proceed.
That's a very interesting take, and I've never even considered that as being, that's never really crossed my mind in a thought. Now, I do know that probability and things that change and kind of some of the, you know, repeatable cycles that we're in, it can be broken down from different lenses. But, you know, when you say the word human sustainability, not everyone's going to truly grasp and understand what that means. Could you elaborate on that? What does that mean in plain terms to where an audience can understand human sustainability? When we think, oh, we can think all the way back to the Romans and XYZ, and we would think we're relatively sustainable and we've, you know, grown and even improved. But what does that look like and how could we explain that?
Well, the fact that human, that we have lost upwards of 50 human empires, it goes directly against any idea that we're sustainable. In fact, it was that I began to examine mathematically. It occurred to me that humans' societies degrade in a highly mathematical, even constant fashion, which led me to an amazing kind of a thing. If I'm seeing this right, our history books are useless. Now, history buffs are not going to like me, but I'm getting used to that. The reason why is because our history books sell the situations of human failure. There is one concern. It's the same play with different actors. So what are we playing at here when we are selling the situations of human failure, when in fact humans break down in precisely mathematical patterns? I stress precise because precise denotes a constant. The human injury is the constant, as we will find out.
So with that in mind, you know, something that I after talking to you and looking into the background and some of the meat here, you know, you're asking people to look at those uncomfortable drivers of behavior, right? Mm-hmm. And that obviously plays deeply into the factor of sustainability when we mentioned the other empires and things that have, civilizations that have collapsed mm-hmm. overall, not truly been sustained. Right. So what I'm curious, what are some of these bigger uncomfortable drivers of behavior that really are attributed to that, well, lack of sustainability?
Here's a real simple way to look at it. We've talked ourselves into the idea that when we arrive in our mother's arms, that we're a blank slate. Nothing could be further from the truth. Again, nothing could be further from the truth. We have the influence of 5 million years of evolution pressing down on our present moments at every second of every day. We are far from a blank slate. We are driven by compulsions and impulses that activate 10 times faster than the thinking brain. They crowd out the thinking brain. They are hallucinating. What do I mean by that? Well, the fight or flight system never got the memo when our ancient predators are long dead now. So it occurred to me that in areas of the brain not available to us in any way, we continue to hunt for long dead predators. We are literally misinterpreting our environments all day, every day. And now I have a question. What could go wrong? We're hallucinating from an evolutionary standpoint. These evolutionary impulses are puppeteers, if you will, and we're their marionettes.
That is an interesting way to look at this. You're explaining this so well that it's a perspective I haven't really thought from before, yet when you talk about it, it feel like I understand it and can see some of the relevance, especially in day-to-day life as a leader, as a person, as a father, or a spouse. I can see where, like you mentioned fight or flight, right? We experience that for different situations that are not how that used to be. Before, it could have been running from a saber tooth, right? Some kind of predator pops up, and now your instinctual response is, well, flight or fight. Now in day-to-day, people may feel that over something that's so small, but it's, like you said, it's like a hallucination. We're hallucinating. And it's an instinctual, yeah. And that is a different take. That's a different look than I've ever really thought of. Why hasn't the human nature really changed in that regard?
Well, first of all, well done. I think you hit about four or five nails on the head that most people don't. We are a tapestry of, I hate to use the word the tip of an iceberg, but human beings in their present moment represent 1/1,000,000th of what we are. Okay, 1/1,000,000th. Right now, as I speak to you, I'm revealing 1/1,000,000th of my entire makeup. It occurred to me a long time ago that when human beings are literally waking up every day, today, 8 billion human beings on this planet woke up, and they will misinterpret their environments all day long. It occurred to me that we are, therefore, I call these evolutionary hallucinations. Now, if one of our friends was hallucinating, we'd get him to a hospital real fast.
That's a really good point, and this is on a much deeper level that we're experiencing this all together. And so far, this segment has been extremely powerful and deep into a topic that's so interesting.
But, we're just getting started.
Oh, yeah, and I'm excited. And with that in mind, you know, to our audience, coming up next, I'm getting tactical on how, you know, I lead conversations that don't turn into debates. And I'm curious on, you know, Anthony's take in the development of this conversation and how we've evolved to run businesses and communicate with others. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Bottom Line. If you want more episodes like this, you can watch Now Media TV live or on demand. You can download the app on Roku or iOS and even catch the podcast anytime you'd like at www.nowmedia.tv. So now we're diving back into a really incredible conversation with Anthony Wall Jr. In this segment, I'm going straight into, you know, how this greater conversation really impacts our ability as leaders, as people, as members of society, and how nobody really trains, you know, how keep conversations productive when identity, fear, ego, and things like that are in the room. And Anthony, your work focuses on deep evolutionary and behavioral drivers, which means people can feel exposed or judged fast. And I know this ties back to how we've evolved or lack thereof. Now, in business, trust breaks when people feel diminished, right? And this is kind of all together as people, but I want to extract a repeatable framework I can use in leadership, sales, partnerships, culture, and just relationship altogether, especially when the stakes are high and emotions are loud. So thank you, Anthony, for being here today. This has already been a lot of fun, and I'm excited to dive into this further.
Well, people don't need to feel fear. They don't need to. The new leader, we're talking about new leadership. The new leader will understand the motivators, the deepest motivators of human behavior, which, by the way, I want to explain something. Prior to 200 years ago, we had not yet deduced evolution. And that means, amazingly, that no human culture prior to 200 years ago had any point of reference to define itself. So they were searching for one another in the dark, and they were dead on their feet. They could not know why. They were driven by impulses and compulsions that place us into conflict and keep us there. If we do not tackle these things, we'll go straight out the door, over the edge, with no other, nothing else available to us. We are a mathematical formula rolling forward. We will alter our equation, or we will perish.
I find that interesting because, in real everyday society and in how we live, you know, when someone gets defensive, What's the real need underneath it? Is it respect, safety, control, belonging, or is it this genetic makeup that we've had that is just ultimately throws us right back into conflict, almost as if we're longing for it without realizing it? What is that?
Well, it's time to drop yet another bomb of clarity. It's getting to be a steady job. You know, there is, I want to explain something to you that, again, you never thought of this. I live to think of these things. And that is that every single conflict on this earth right now, and every other conflict from the past, trillions of them, all of them had a misinterpreted threat at their core. I want to stress this. If there have been 40 trillion conflicts, each of them were driven by a misinterpretation. I ask again, what could go wrong other than everything? So all of a sudden, the concerns that we have, particularly with self-interest, because self-interest isn't in our DNA. Our DNA does not recognize self-interest. No wonder we crash this thing every time. All right. So conflict, or every single conflict is a misinterpretation. My God, to overcome that is species saving.
That is interesting. And looking at it from that kind of big lens there, it's all those conflicts, all those issues, those however you want to put it, right? It's there are patterns. There are consistent patterns. You mentioned throughout society and in history, there is a mathematical equation to the human injury, to the way that we are. But, you know, in language, right, as the way we communicate, you know, what kind of patterns and communication ultimately instinctually just escalates conflict versus what kind of patterns and communication can really turn the temperature down? Because like you said, those conflicts and things, that nature, it's all miscommunication at its core. So how can we apply that in language in the way that we have intent to communicate with others?
Well, let's get one thing straight again, a bomb of clarity, not trying to be comical in any way. Everything that we, every single thing that we attempt to get across, no matter how good we are, is subject to invisible forces that we can, we never could, but now we can understand in great detail. And I can't stress this enough. We know everything about everything and almost nothing about ourselves. Okay, so this is a being that needs to forgive itself and to understand that there is no such thing as pure thought. When we're driven by compulsions and impulses from ancient realities long gone, what kind of thinking are we capable of? None. Let me finish my own sentence. Human beings are incapable of pure thought as I speak. Incapable. Critical thinking is not as critical as we think. It is driven by an invisible motivator from our past. And if we don't understand and get this under control, then we're doomed to just literally roll forward like in an inertia as opposed to a choice. Humans don't fail from choices. We fail from choices we no longer have.
Ooh.
That makes any sense.
That's a powerful, powerful line right there. And I, looking at this from 10,000 feet as I'm talking to you, I'm like, oh my goodness, this makes a lot of sense. But you know, if you mentioned if we don't change this, if we don't dive into this, if we don't understand it and really pinpoint this, it leads to disaster. That is the loop of unsustainability. But really coming at this from a whole different mind-blown type lens here, when we embrace change, it dances between logical and emotional. But how could we look at this and embrace the reality that you see clearly here and really apply that as we move forward? How would that make a difference for us, and how could we utilize that information?
Well, let me use some mild comedy. We talked about fight or flight. Look out the window. See if you see anyone running. I don't. It would appear that fight or flight in the modern day has lost half of its choices. Now, do you see anybody fighting? I do. again, I'm being rhetorical here. We are at one another's throats. We're creatures that have no natural enemies, for crying out loud. You can't be a creature that has no natural enemies that nevertheless plots and executes upon the destruction of its own. This is not difficult. My value is that I say it out loud. I'm fearless. I put it straight out there. I don't do theory because human beings have no luxury of theory. Nobody's interested in my theories. The only thing that comes out of here is truth or what stands to reason on its worst day. So watch this. Human beings have a mathematical failure ahead of us. We are progressing in exactly the same way that 40 empires already did. We're right on schedule. It's right around the corner. Unless we get ourselves under control with data we never had, but now do in great abundance.
That is, if 40 other examples exist of this type of progression and change that ultimately led to a big, distinct failure and destabilization, how do we change that cycle? How do we not repeat this threat that's going to consistently keep popping up based on the nature that we have of the way that we've just, well, as you've mentioned, you know, if decisions, the way we think and things like that are really impacted by these invisible forces that are from our long forgotten past and things of that nature. But how do we avoid this cycle? How do we start maneuvering that and seeing it for what it is and applying a different strategy?
The answer is a short term and long term. In the short term, we'll need to own what I just said. We'll need to own the immensity of our own past. This is sounds dramatic, but watch this. We are overwhelmed by the immensity of our own past. Okay. We are in an indifferent universe. For the purposes of problem solving, we're problem solving for human sustainability here at Noesis. Certain things have to be true. And that is this. Humans evolved on Earth. That's just the way of it. Now we can solve problems. Now, if one of the big problems is that 65% of the people on this Earth don't believe in evolution, that's a statistic that begs to be understood, not chastised. We have to understand. We have to move human thought over the course of a century to the idea that we are pressed upon by powers we can't see. That being is helpless in a universe that is indifferent, that has 1 million weapons, where we have so few. We'll be swept away. I don't intend drama. I don't do drama. We will not be here unless we know what is now knowable in great detail. Now, I know we're getting far afield from what you do, so let's bring it right back.
You know, it's interesting because you've got me really chewing on a lot of different things, and something that popped up in my head that I've thought about before in different ways is, as finite beings, we cannot expect to understand an infinitely changing set of circumstances in front of us, as well as this infinitely growing set of history and dynamic that has changed. We can't expect to understand and really chew on all of it, but now to our audience. As we continue this incredible conversation and dive into such powerful conversation, next I want to start pushing into mindset and how our mindset really makes an impact and makes a difference, especially in discipline. But the problem is massive and the results, they can definitely take time. So I want to dive into that next. So don't go anywhere. Grab a coffee, stretch out, grab some popcorn, whatever it is you got to do. We'll be right back on the bottom line. Welcome back to The Bottom Line. I am still here with Anthony Wall Jr., and I want to talk about the pressure that doesn't show up on a resume, the mental load of caring deeply, seeing the problem clearly, and still having to perform every day. And as we've really dove into a lot of really interesting stuff so far, there's a lot of factors that we can't see, that we don't know apply to the way that we think, the mentality behind it all. Now, this show is about earning success, and that takes resilience. And I want to connect the personal side of things to this bigger scope and how that really does define some leadership outcomes and things of that nature. So we can apply this in every day. So as we look at the, well, the history of the way we handle problems and how we somehow strategically seem to seek out these problems, I want Anthony's, well, I want his insight on how we can apply this, how we can utilize this, and how does it make a difference on day to day. So Anthony, again, thank you so much for this powerful conversation. You're allowing me to explore thought process and thought patterns I have not really been able to dive into yet. So thank you.
Always my pleasure. I just hope I'm not too far afield from what you do.
No, this is great. Now, as we dive into a little bit of a practical sense here, this way that we have evolved, this way that we have developed, and these historical factors that really kind of play into our makeup, emotional resilience, how does that look in today's life? Not just the motivational quotes and things like that, but how do we really put into practice emotional resilience so that we're not so quick to offend, or so that we're not allowing some of these things that impact us invisibly to really dictate how we move forward? I know it's a pretty broad question, but I think that's something you might be able to elaborate on a little bit.
Let's go into the office for a second. Let's go into the meeting room. Okay. If there is defensive behavior, there are two things going on that we never think about. Whoever is feeling defensive is misinterpreting a threat. Now, this goes to the leader. The leader, the future leader, understands in great depth what is driving a defensive response rather than looking at the defensive response and acting upon it. The new leader is going to understand human behavior in great detail so that they can diagnose what they're looking at rather than react to it. We will adopt completely different types of leadership, or we're doomed to find ourselves in the same vortex. It's nothing less than a vortex until we understand what's knowable about humans.
I find that to be really simple, because we do find a way to stick to patterns and cycles, and if we don't change and grow, I mean, we can't expect anything to change and grow with us, right? We can very, very easily be caught in that loop of doing the same thing again and again, expecting a different result. But I am curious, you know, as this is such a very interesting topic and developing noesis and the human injury, you know, as an example for leaders out here that are trying to evolve and grow and adopt new mindsets and new thought processes, what's your method for staying open-minded when becoming mentally just doused in this type of understanding and information?
Well, again, I said that prior to 1859, when Charles Darwin deduced evolution, again, we couldn't define ourselves. How can a being like us that can't define itself ever hope to arrive at any type of sustainability? And indeed, they were all lost. There's a lot of people out there saying, this is a new low. Oh, I got bad news for them. This is the latest new low, Ryan. We've been down this road 50 times. We are precisely at the point of degradation into eventual non-existence that we've been in 49 times. Every empire on earth decayed in the same way. That's the power of observation. I noticed that this was a constant, and that our history books were simply the situational analysis. Watch this. Situational analysis, useless. Throw your history books away. They offer us nothing. We are driven by multiple wrecking ball compulsions. They're wrecking balls. We don't bargain with threats. We pulverize them, or we run from them. So in an office setting, if you diminish anyone around you, let alone in a meeting, let alone as a leader, what you've ignited is an invisible conflagration, meaning that There can't, you can't, if you're feeling insulted or defensive, you can't get up and fight your boss. You will internalize that. And later, you will act upon it in silent, covert, vengeful actions. I explain this all the time when people with negotiation. I say, if you negotiate for parity, fairness, or if you negotiate for advantage, put the party off. Because the first chance that somebody realizes that you got the advantage, the rest of the contract is doomed. You understand what I mean?
It's almost like a survival instinct. And is that right around the same kind of concept, as far as it's almost like, even if we have an intention not to one-up each other or have an edge or whatever that may be, it almost seems like it's in our nature at this point to have the advantage, to have the upper hand, and we don't want to ever be in a position of weakness, and that can really complicate the way that we interact as a society. Is there any validity to that thought?
Well, we are no longer recognizable at any level of our DNA. What do I mean? Self-interest, we are self-interested beings. 10,000 years ago, we crossed over from collaboration, which, by the way, was 5 million years, one model, smashing success. 10,000 years ago, acquisition yielded to collaboration, yielded to acquisition. Collaboration is a wheel that rolls along. If you put a nail in any tire, no matter where your nail is, the whole tire goes flat. Okay, that's what we are intended to do in our DNA. The crossover from collaboration to acquisition made us self-interested. Those repel, boom, they annihilate. Okay, matter, antimatter. Self-interest is not recognized in human DNA. Again, what could go wrong? Why do we repeat? Why? Because we don't know how to fly this thing called self-interest. We don't know what to do. There's no DNA-based template. Do you understand that?
Yeah, that right there seems like the underlying reason why, as you've summarized a few times, that we consistently go around this loop. We go through these cycles. It's that self-interest aspect that we don't really understand, because there's a lot of things we do and we think is self-interest, but rather it's just setting up for delayed destruction. It is not conducive to long-term sustainability. At least that's from my understanding of this now, is until we really understand that self-interest and be able to act upon that, there's just no way of breaking that cycle. Is that along the lines of being correct?
Not only is it correct, you just hit upon the constant. Human failure is doomed to be a constant unless we know what is now knowable. You hear the passion in my voice. It's now knowable. Okay, we couldn't know what we can know now. We will know it, or we will sentence ourselves to an unnecessary fate. By the way, this is huge. Human sustainability. We're working on four things. Stay with me. This is quick. Climate change, pandemic, nuclear, AI, disruptive technologies. We've got to get these things under control, right? Well, there is one concern. I count at least 15. So we're missing 10 major things that will kill us if we don't get it under control. We're missing the point almost entirely. Because we want to? No, the information was never available. Now it is available. So let me explain. Human beings will know what is knowable, or we will be swept away by an indifferent universe that's in no mood for whatever the hell we're shoveling.
I like that. That is you mentioned, you know, you have a really direct approach. You speak facts and you just tell like it is, and you're brave to say it. And I appreciate that about you, because you're not addressing this with a haphazard, oh, hey, this is what it could be, this is what it might be, this is what, you know, where it's going to go. You're addressing this with seriousness, because this is serious. If nothing changes, everything resets, restarts, civilizations collapse, and that just, it's that loop of unsustainability. Now,
So imagine my confusion. Human beings are planning for a future as if there remotely is one.
Right. Yeah. And you'd think there's been, you said, 49 other instances where this was the same thing. And it happens again and again and again. We are in a big cycle that we are too close-minded to see. And that is a problem.
Yeah. Well, here's another awful thing that happened to us. Talk about the mother of paradox. We can't continue with what we do, nor can we stop it. Why? Because the economy would collapse tomorrow if our conflicts were to collapse. You talk about, talk about a cruel, cruel paradox. We're innocent beings. I bring to humanity a verdict of utter innocence. We call ourselves a scourge to punish ourselves. Who was the genius that made cluelessness an existential felony?
This is
we don't know
interesting.
What the heck we're doing.
Yeah.
We don't know who we are. And we're going to kill ourselves for that? Is that the punishment? No, not while I breathe.
You're at least going to speak up. You're going to talk about it. Bring light to it. And, you know, to our audience, this conversation is deep, and I'm going to be reviewing this multiple times myself. Now, in our final segment, really, I wanted to pull together into this bottom line of how, you know, we can turn these insights into practical leadership decisions. But I'm thinking I want to dive into the human injury a little bit further, because I think this might hold some of the answers that I'm now currently trying to seek. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on The Bottom Line. Welcome back to The Bottom Line. If you want more episodes like this, you can watch Now Media TV live or on demand. You can download the app on Roku or iOS and catch the podcast version anytime you want at nowmedia.tv. Now, we are back in the final segment with Anthony Wall Jr. And this conversation has gone so many different ways that I never thought it would mentally, because I'm still trying to grasp the reality of this incredible concept that he's presented today. Now, we're going to do something a little different in this segment, and I want to highlight his book, The Human Injury. So, Anthony, thank you for being here today and giving us such a fun conversation to have that really ties in a different perspective for our audience. So, with us in the final segment, I want to dive into the human injury. So, what is it that you can introduce us to and lay this out for us? What is the human injury?
Okay, we're here for human sustainability. I explained earlier that human beings have no time for my theories. Nobody's interested in my theories. We are truth-based here. We are rooted in evolutionary science and also socio-mathematics. The human injury is no buzz phrase. It is as real as a migraine. Okay, I want to make sure everybody understands that. I explained earlier that we are acting almost fully unnatural, called away completely from our deepest longings. Self-interested beings who nevertheless have 5 million years of collaboration, cooperation, tugging at us every second. And into this, we are attempting to fly a new technology called self-interest. When you ask, why do we keep crashing? Why do we keep making the same mistake? Why does the starting gun kill our horse? It's simple, because our DNA has no template to negotiate this new technology called self-interest. The human injury occurred. It is an evolutionary crossover period that was never understandable, but is now understandable in great detail. About 10,000 years ago, human beings, after 5 million years of evolution, 2 million years as Homo erectus had the will to roam, but not the gray matter. Homo sapien took over about 300,000 years ago. We then made our way to all areas of the globe over the course of 300,000 years in a journey that is now knowable as if we're watching a movie. It was once a poorly lit alley, even 50 years ago. Now, our journey on this earth is knowable in great detail. So, when we arrived at all areas of the globe, where was there to go? We live on a sphere. That means that we literally reached all places. And a not so funny thing happened. Not maybe. Now I want to add something bold. I have asked college professors from Oxford to Cambridge to Queensland, to Rio, to Cairo, to Princeton, to Caltech. I have asked all of them to plainly put me out of business. Send me back to the golf course, although I stink in golf, I want to add that. When that crossover period started, we became bigger groups. We domesticated large animals. We domesticated dogs to manage our large animals. Our fields of crops grew bigger. Okay. The illusion of ownership intruded on the human experience. Ownership created the first diminished human being. I want to stress this. When a diminished human being, a human being that is like an equal in every way in our DNA, like an equal, finally was marginalized, diminished relative to another, the catastrophe was immediate. If we can go back in time to determine where the first human being was diminished in stature to another, we're at ground zero for human failure. Those failures were immediate, catastrophic. We had to militarize the conflicts that arose from these new dynamics. We began to beat others' throats rather than helping one another along. Now we were clashing. Self-interest and collaboration repel. This is not, I want you to note the simplicity of it here. Complexity is a diversion. We hear this all the time. We're navigating complex social issues. Most certainly are not. We make a Swiss clock look slow. So mathematical and precise are our breakdowns. Once we crossed over to flying that technology, we were transported into the metaphorical equivalent of a 747. We crashed it every time with no other outcome available to us, because again, no template in our DNA equals what are we doing in this cockpit other than crashing it every time. We lack the DNA-based template to negotiate self-interest. That means that until we diagnose an injury, a collective injury that happened to us when we crossed into unnatural behavior, by the way, unnatural behavior cannot persist. That alone will select us for our extinction. That alone. So make no mistake, human beings were selected for extinction the minute we took up behaviors of acquisition and the complications thereto, namely increased complexity fed by inequality. That's on the tombstone of 40 human cultures. I'm going to point something else out here. 5 million years, smashing success. 10,000 years, 50 empirical failures. What the hell's going wrong here? It ain't hard. It's called the human injury. We suffered a collective injury to the human psyche. Our hearts, literally, are broken. The human heart is broken. That is an empathic take. That's a being that's out there on a ledge to suicide. And I hold in my hand a verdict of not guilty. We did all of this in a vacuum of knowledge. We could not define ourselves, but now we can. And we better. We'll be gone. We'll be swept away.
You know, something I kind of want to dive into here, and I heard you say it was the unnatural behaviors in people. And that's something that I really want to dive in a little bit more. Could you explain that, elaborate there a little bit more? Because trying to understand, what are those unnatural behaviors?
Well, the most self-interest is, it's hard to get this point, so let me say it again. Self-interested behavior is not recognized in human DNA. We don't know how to be self-interested. I just explained every self-interested failure you'll ever see. Every single concern that happens between human beings, there's always self-interest at it. 40 years of friendship between Tony and Ryan dies in one day. It'll always be a self-interested concern. We don't know what to do with it. We don't have, we have no way to negotiate it. So let me tell you what Noesis is here to do. We are here to unify and modernize all current human sustainability efforts across the globe. As I speak to you right now, a species just went extinct. We'll lose 150 today for the crime of acting naturally. Imagine what this universe is going to do to a being that acts unnaturally relative to its deepest longings. We are completely called away from what we're meant to do. That being is going out the door with no other outcome available to it until we understand why, and we incorporate at least a century to turn this thing around. What we're currently doing now has no future whatsoever. We are not sustainable. I stress this, not a bit. I need any professor to put me out of business. Send me back to the golf course. I'm waiting. Okay.
I find that powerful.
We are planning for a future as if there was remotely one for us. That's it.
You know, it's interesting because it's like almost playing like you're an ant in this massive sandbox. It's kind of the feeling when you think about this, because what can one person truly do to make a difference in something that you just said could take a century to truly change and to re-navigate and to redirect? So I find that to be, it's okay. And you said, you know, the whole point of Noesis is to bring together all of these efforts. It's to move in the same direction, not to spread the effort amongst different directions, different thesis, you know. It's bring it together to get to that result, to make that change. Even if it's subtle and takes a century, it's got to happen in some way. Otherwise, the cycle never, ever changes. Now,
here's why it takes a century. Nothing we currently do, not one revenue stream can be disturbed, or I will quickly paint a bullseye on my sweatshirt. Okay, We cannot disturb anything we currently. That's the good news. Here's my short-term instructions. Carry on. We must understand that we're not here to take anything. We're not speedboats. We're an aircraft carrier. We can turn a rudder, and then it'll take a century to turn us around. I think we have that century. But past that century, if we don't throw a lifeline to the current human inertia, it's just as pretty as you please. I could say something more.
This has been such a powerful conversation, and I've got to jump in right there, because to our audience, if you want to dig into this more, you've got to find Anthony. You've got to get the book, The Human Injury, and pay attention to Noesis and where Noesis is going. And Anthony, thank you so much for being here today. This episode has been very unique in my experience of doing this. And to our audience, remember, the bottom line is, if you want success, if you want sustainability, whatever that may be, it is, action is required to make that happen. Now, this has been The Bottom Line. We'll see you next time.